Well, the Harja, Sean Misha, Jerry Adams, Arishon, August Tasula Gumsa, Gume Shiv, Guhun Takar Fad. Well, it's the eve of Christmas, and I'm going to start with a recommendation for a perfect Christmas gift. Now, it may be a wee bit late, so if that's the case, the gifts will still be available down in Kaharu Pooley in the Coulter Land, Bohur Nawal, Belfast. And of course, it's the new book, Togal Cree, about Sean McGuill, August Aharja. And it's an absolutely brilliant book. Even bad for yourself, but for someone you love. It's bilingual. Don't let that put you off. It's very, very accessible. Every page, Irish and English, columns side by side, page by page. It's beautifully designed. It's colourful. There are many graphics and photos. As befits a book which celebrates the work of the people it is about. Now, Sean McGuill is one of that band of visionaries and activists which gave us the new Bombay Street after the original Bombay Street was destroyed in the 1969 pogroms. Also, they gave us the urban Gael talk on Bohur Shawe, Balmurphy Enterprises, the White Rock Industrial Estate, Garishdown Fubble, and many, many other projects going back to the mid-1960s. This book's also about the Irish language in West Belfast and the wider cultural revolution across Belfast City. And while Sean is singled out here for special mention, this book is about all those who were involved and their pioneering families. It's a tribute to the critical role played by these Irish-speaking visionaries, revolutionaries, doers. It's about the structures of education, employment, progress and self-help which they created despite fierce opposition from an actively hostile unionist and British regime. It also draws heavily on archival material from and spassed in the wonderful College de Firsta in the Gaeltacht Quarter. Have no doubt about the achievements of those involved. This is a highly successful group of progressive Irish men and women in one of the most economically impoverished yet intellectually and culturally rich areas in Ireland. They persisted and they prevailed, and we have all benefited. It's also a gentle reminder of the type of language activism which is needed for the future. The activism of Na Habere Jane. Don't talk about it, do it. I'm a huge admirer of all the people celebrated in this very important book. I'm constantly inspired and encouraged by their example. Read Togal Cree and you will be inspired also. And so will whoever is lucky to get it from you. If not, this Christmas, certainly in the new year. So Shin Shin. In the meantime, away from our own region, for as far back as I can remember, and it included this place also, the phrase, truth is the first casualty of war, has been used when wars are analysed. This phrase is very old. The first time that we know it was used was by a Greek soldier, poet and playwright, whose name I cannot pronounce, but he was active in the 5th century BC. And it was he who said, in war, truth is the first casualty. Now, we Irish have long experience of this. During the decades of conflict here, political censorship by the British and Irish governments and the establishment media was widespread. But media manipulation goes back further. In her exceptional book, Ireland, the Propaganda War, Liz Curtis, reminds us that the arrival in the north of the BBC in 1926 saw that organisation institutionalise a unionist ethos within its news coverage. Quoting from a BBC document in 1930, Liz Curtis writes that the BBC Regional Service, quote, reflects the sentiments of the people who have always maintained unswerving loyalty to British ideals and to British culture. Northern Ireland relies on broadcasting to strengthen its common loyalties with Britain. There were, of course, exceptions within the BBC and outside it. There were journalists prepared to lift their heads above the parapet to tell the truth. Fair play to them. But they didn't face what today's journalists in Palestine face on a daily basis. Israeli forces are systematically trying to shut down the truth in a ruthless and methodical campaign of assassination of journalists. At the weekend, Al Jazeera journalist Samer Abu Akka was killed. His colleague Wael Dabdu was wounded. Only weeks ago, four members of Wael's family, including his wife, Amna, son age 15, daughter age 7, and grandson age 1, were killed. They were murdered when Israeli forces blew up a house they were sheltering in. The house was in a neighbourhood that the Israeli government said was a safe zone. The Committee to Protect Journalists reported that at least 64 journalists, this was at the weekend, mostly Palestinian and media workers, are among the almost 20,000 people killed by Israeli forces so far. At least 13 others have been injured, and three journalists are reported missing. In addition, journalists in the West Bank are routinely and savagely assaulted by Israeli soldiers and settlers. The Israeli government's objective is to try and control the narrative to excuse their genocidal campaign against the people of Gaza, but in particular, children. They also seek to keep on board those few governments who shamefully support turning Gaza into a graveyard for the innocents. I welcome the Irish government's recent effort at last week's EU summit, along with Spain, Malta and Belgium, to persuade the EU to adopt the demand for a humanitarian ceasefire. According to Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, the position of the overwhelming majority of the European Union countries now is that there should be a ceasefire. However, the summit failed to reach agreement. This Monday, tomorrow, will be Christmas Day. There is little prospect of the slaughter stopping, but if it does stop, it will be for a pause. And that is not acceptable. The deliberate and callous shooting dead of two Christian women, Nahida Kailka Anton and her daughter Samar, as they walked to a convent of nuns in the compound of the Holy Family Parish, and the shooting dead of three Israeli hostages by Israeli soldiers, adds to the abundant evidence that Gaza is a killing field for the Israeli government. This weekend, as we celebrate and reflect on the Christmas story, let us applaud those journalists under threat every second of every day in Gaza and the West Bank, and recommit ourselves to the enormous solidarity campaign for the Palestinian people that has seen many millions across the world declare, "We are all Palestinians now." And just to conclude, the issue of neutrality is one that pops up, Irish neutrality pops up every so often, and at a time when significant wars are raging, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Israel's assault and genocide against the Palestinian people, the Sudan and Sahel region of Africa and elsewhere, Irish neutrality has never been more important. International tension and disputes between nations and states, or within nations and states, are not new. The establishment of the United Nations after the Second World War created a new paradigm, a new international structure to resolve conflicts. It has not been easy. The system is not perfect. The recent use of the veto by the United States government to block a ceasefire resolution for Gaza at the UN is evidence of the fragility of the system. But the UN remains the best means of resolving disputes, and Irish forces and peacekeeping missions make an enormous and positive contribution to peace. The announcement by the Fianna Fáil leader and Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, last month that the Irish government is to scrap the triple lock system is a retrograde step. The triple lock is a mechanism which sets out the criteria for the involvement by 12 or more Irish soldiers in peace missions overseas. For troops to be deployed requires that action to be mandated by the United Nations and also to be approved by the government and then by the Dáil through a resolution. But this is not the first time that this triple lock and the future of Irish neutrality has been raised. Fine Gael supported dumping the triple lock years ago, but Fianna Fáil in the 2020 manifesto for the general election said it would fully maintain neutrality and the triple lock. And therein lies the rub. Irish neutrality and the triple lock are seen as political Siamese twins, inextricably linked. The scrapping of the triple lock would dangerously undermine neutrality and open the door for a future Irish government joining NATO, a decision Micheál Martin has already said does not require a referendum but simply a decision by government. Following the invasion of Ukraine, Micheál Martin said, "We need to reflect on military non-alignment in Ireland and our military neutrality." The Irish government is treading a dangerous path. Neutrality is and should remain the touchstone of Irish foreign policy. It allows an Irish government to play a positive role in the wider world, especially in defence of human rights. It should not be left to the governments, to Micheál Martin or Ríor Bradker, to decide, or any other politician, whether Irish soldiers are sent to fight wars for the big powers. And Sinn Féin, and just to conclude, or a jerker, have a really, really lovely Christmas. Think of the people of Gaza and people suffering throughout the world, and enjoy what we have, a peaceful Christmas. Gunyuri and Tal Levsha, Nulag Huna, Devsha, Gulyar. Mila Bwehesa Harja, Bwien Ur, Vuisha, Devsha, Gulyar.